Spirit will do as it will.
Well, Mr. Weaver, Andrew Weaver, you have been a remarkable guest. I'm not often left speechless by a guest, but you managed, you did it to me, and I'm deeply grateful for your being on this show.
Well, Peter and the Bible were brothers, so someday we may meet on this side of Jordan or the other one.
Well, I sure hope so. Thank you, and we would love to have you back again. We'll be in touch.
Anytime. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Good evening. Wow. That was hard for me to keep between the lines. So much of what he told us was so deeply personal to me, and I know when he began discussing the issue of torture, it was deeply personal to you, too. And speaking of the LGBT community, that was brought up at the conference, too. You'll notice this is LGBT Conversation Radio, but I really haven't brought that up because, to me, the library at Southern Methodist University is such a whore of Babylon issue to me that what the Methodist Church did about gay marriage was purely beside the point. Not completely, of course, but certainly a sub-issue to the Bush Library, and the Methodist Church basically decided to keep the same rules for the next until the next conference that comes up. Basically, it's that I have the Book of Discipline here, they print from it, but pretty much that it's gay marriage is incompatible with Christian teaching, but that LGBT folks can be fully involved with the church and can take communion and can go on the picnics and fully participate in every way, but we've tabled any decision on that for at least another 4 years is pretty much the decision there. The Methodist Church, like other churches, will eventually come around to the right decision there, but it's like the Bush Library is a fire and the marriage issue was secondary, at least to me. Hell, I've never been able to get married, so you know, it's not like how can you miss what you've never had, you know. So in any case, where were we? Yes, it's top of the hour. I tell you what, that was an emotional interview. I'll need some recovery time. I'll know you will too. Why don't we go to break with a wonderful Dorothy Moore track. This was sent to us by Mr. Larry Sanders. It's not a remix, but it's a wonderful, you'll get it. You people have hearts. Misty Blue.
Such a long, long time. Look like I get you off of my mind, but I can't. Just the thought of you turns my whole world misty blue. Oh, just the mention of your name turns the flicker to a flame. Listen to me, good baby. I think of the things we used to do, and my whole world turns misty blue. Heaven knows I've tried. Baby, will I say that I'm glad we're through?
Riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
Yeehaw! That's 877, the number 4, head on, 877-4-H-E-A-D-O-N. Also translates to 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, use that at area code 304-658-3333, rings in West Virginia. And email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. Lord, the web has been... You know, this is the sort of story you just don't know exactly how to head into. Well, you can tell. You just don't know how to go there. But we might as well address the issue, and at least I can give you my comments on it. I'd like you to meet Mickey Cantor. That's K-A-N-T-O-R, Mickey Cantor. Now, Mickey Cantor was the chairman of the Clinton-Gore campaign in 92. He has been a friend of the Clintons since in the 70s, let's say. Potentially 28 years. I think after 28 years, you come to know your fellow man after a friendship that lasts that long. He was also the Secretary of Commerce, or is the Secretary of was for Clinton, and currently he is the advisor to Hillary for 08. Now, there was a videotape. Been posted on YouTube, and it's recently been rediscovered of some of his remarks in the war room during the presidential election back when Gore Clinton did their thing in 92. I'm gonna quote it to you, and I have the audio. Mr. Cantor says, after a stack of papers arrives in the room showing current election results, or polling results, rather, for Indiana, Mr. Cantor exclaims, "Look at Indiana! Look at Indiana! 42-40! It doesn't matter if we win. Those people are shit. How would you like to be a worthless white nigger?" Well... Of course, that means poor people, at least That's one interpretation of it. You realize all these people are in the millionaire class. So I think maybe the key word here might be worthless, and white nigger may be the icing on the cake, so to speak. There is a huge controversy today. Mickey Cantor is up in arms, brother. He says, I've never used that word in my entire life, ever, under any circumstances, an angry Cantor told the Huffington Post. And by the way, you might wonder, well, I am bringing it up because it's been in the news today, and most of you have seen it. But I'm bringing it up, too, if the Clinton administration, there's suspicion that the Clinton administration at least used Obama's minister to say things that might damage the Clinton campaign. Why not have someone from the Clinton campaign potentially damage the Clinton campaign? It's just, you know, politics is really dirty, is it not? Which is, I guess, why I'm covering it. Now, the Huffington Post became intimidated, in my estimation. He said, Cantor said, let me give it to you. Cantor said, I've listened to the video, and you have it, and you can't tell me what I'm saying in that second sentence. You can't decipher that. Indeed, Mr. Cantor is insisting that what he said was, how would you like to be in the White House right now? How would you like to be in the White House right now? He's insisting that he said that rather than how would you like to be a worthless white nigger. The lawyer repeats, Cantor's lawyer says, he did not say that, he did not say that. And in fact, Cantor has not directly, but pretty much verbally threatened the Huffington Post with a libel suit. He said he has his best libel lawyers to approach YouTube and Huffington Post, and told the Huffington Post they shouldn't even print his defense or the article because it would be the advancement of a non-story. And he told Huffington Post, I don't need to be defended. What you write, what you are doing is libel. And so he's accused him of libel and told him he's hiring the very best libel attorneys and insisting that, you know, what he said was like, what was it again? He insisted that he said, would you like to be in the White House now? Words that affect him. Here we go. Says he insists that he said in this sound clip, how would you like to be in the White House? Now, the reason that this is debated is because he at the beginning of the sentence, he didn't really realize there was a camera in the room when he began his statement. Look at Indiana, he said in great excitement. 42-40, it doesn't matter if we win. Those people are shit. Okay. Oops, there's a camera in the room. Then he said in his bestest, teeniest, tiniest little whisper to George Snuffleupagus and the other family, other gentlemen standing here, how would you like to be a worthless white nigger? Now, I've listened to it multiple times. I've listened to it with good quality headphones. It happened to be a Sony model, a professional model I bought just for this show. Great headphones. I listened to it by enhancing it through an audio processor. I tried to strip out as much background noise as I could. I've watched the video, both the clip that's circulating on the web. I've watched the YouTube. I've watched his lips as he mouthed the words as closely as possible. And I got to tell you, folks, the man said, how would you like to be a worthless white nigger? Very disrespectful to the state of Indiana, but in fact, disrespectful to poor people and insulting and hurtful to black people. But basically, he's saying that Indiana is a bunch of dupes, and it doesn't matter if we win there anyway. Those people are shit, he says. He doesn't debate that. Oh, he said that loud enough for the camera. It was only the whisper that he's debating. He's saying, you can't tell what I said, that last sentence. There's no way you can tell. Well, indeed, folks, you can tell. In fact, we're going to run some audio here, and I'll point out to the listeners that if you would like me to send you these audio clips so you too can put on your headphones and listen very, very closely, as I did for an extended period of time, you will, I think, come to the same decision I'm willing to send, because, you know, obviously your computer speakers may not reveal, because he whispered. He didn't want anybody to know. And you could, in fact, I can even see on George Snuffleupagus is standing at a profile at that point in time. And you notice if you saw the video, George Snuffleupagus keeps his head down. He's like, oh my God, there's a camera here. I can't believe you're, how it remains hidden for so long, I don't know. But in any case, it's being brought out now. Isn't it just amazing how you can find dirt during an election that nobody ever, in any case, Bob has a clip there called Worthless White Nigger, and he also has a clip there called Worthless White Nigger Loop. Bob, would you run the first one, the Worthless White Nigger, please?
Look at Indiana. Wait. Look at Indiana. 42-40. It does not have to be those people. How would you like to be?
Okay. Let me repeat that for you. Look at Indiana, 42-40. It doesn't matter if we win. Those people are shit. How would you like to be a worthless white nigger? Bob, run that same track again, not the loop, the same track.
Look at Indiana. Wait. Look at Indiana. 42-40. It does not have to be those people. How would you like to be?
I grew up in the South. I've heard the word nigger since I was a little bitty talk show host in diapers. I know what the word sounds like. I know what the word sounds like when it's whispered. God knows I've heard it whispered all my life. I further attempted to enhance the last sentence, which Mickey Cantor insists that he did not say, and I've looped it so that you can hear it. I believe it's looped 3 or 4 times. Reduce the background noise as much as possible. And I should warn Bob, this particular one is at a higher volume level than the first one. I boosted the volume and tried to limit the frequency band to boost the last sentence. And I just listen closely. Bob, run the loop, please. Okay. How would you like to be a worthless white nigger, was what you just heard. You may not be able to tell on your computer speakers, but as I said, if you'll send me an email to peter@headonradionetwork.com, it's very easy, peter@headonradionetwork.com, I'll be glad to email you these two tracks as attachments. Even if you have dial-up, you can get them. The audio loops, both tracks are extremely short, and they're not very large, and your dial-up account will receive them. For those of you who are listening via the podcast, well, by all means, email me too when you hear this over the next week or month or year. I'll have them. It's not like all this stuff goes into an audio archive somewhere. The audio never goes away. Just drop me an email, peter@headonradionetwork.com, and I will be more than happy to send these to you. You too can put on your fancy Sony headphones, and you can listen very, very closely, and you can adjust your tone controls, and you will see that, in fact, Mickey Cantor said exactly what we're saying that he said. You know, why is this important? Well, it's important because of the close friendship between, and I'm not saying that Clinton is prejudiced against black folks. I'm saying that they're all multimillionaire bastards is what I'm saying. And highly insulting. Just drop me a note. I'll send you the audio myself. And Lottie in the chat room points out the video is still active on YouTube if you'd like to see it. At least I think so. In any case, Bob, Lottie, if you'd send me the direct link to that video, I'll post it on today's calendar date. And folks can see the video. Preston, welcome to the show from Denver.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. It's good to hear from you, sir.
Thanks so much for that interview you had That was really powerful. I appreciated that.
It was very powerful, and I was glad when Froze. Well, we sometimes tease him and call him Frozy. When Gene called from Oregon, because quite frankly, I had gotten a little shaky. My voice was shaky. I had some tears in my eyes. In fact, Gene from Oregon saved me by coming on and talking to him for a while I regained my composure. Well, when he was speaking of torture.
Great, great. He mentioned the outside money. He kept mentioning the outside money that's trying to guide the church in a reactionary, authoritarian direction. And I may have missed it, but did he specify where he thought the money was coming from? Was it just from like the SCAFE Foundation, or is it someplace else as well?
That too. And the someplace else you could technically say was within the church, meaning that it's the Board of Regents for Southern Methodist University. Preston, it's a who's who, a very high level, very wealthy, plugged in and highly connected, friends of the family, exchange birthday presents, go on boating trips, help him clear brush, oil executives, and the like. Hunt is one of the primary ones. Ray Hunt from, what was it, the oil company that Bush used to play with. Yeah.
I think
he's one of them.
Like the Hunt brothers, weren't their brothers,
yeah.
I think?
Okay. Yes. Yes. And there's that's only the tip of the iceberg. The entire Board of Regents is the best way I can put it to you, is just infested with them. Very high dollar, very conservative, in it for the money, let them eat cake, Republicans. And this thing about the library coming has been discussed at that level between those very, very wealthy people and Rove and Cheney since 2002. It was all a wired, done deal, and carefully concealed, I might add, from the faculty and from the students and the alumni, and especially from people who go to Methodist churches. And that's where the money's coming from. Part of the money he was talking about.
Okay. A concealed money, you say?
Yeah.
Or a concealed effort, because they how unpopular they are. Interesting.
Yeah.
I was also wondering if maybe, I don't know, parts of the government, I don't know, some security agencies, or who knows who else is investing in it.
But, good point. Good point.
You know, I remember Bill Moyers did a show about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, maybe, on PBS, and he talked about kind of like propaganda operations being conducted via churches in Latin America, and they preach to the poor kind of a don't worry about this world theology, you know, maybe in your next life God will treat you better, to try to divert them away from organizing and mobilizing against the injustices they saw in the world.
And, well said, Preston.
Yeah.
Well said. And in fact, the backdoor operation is very typical of the Bush crime family and the legions and the hordes of demons that follow them, because they always attempt to come in the back door or insinuate themselves or get in such a way that nobody notices, and all of a sudden, poof, they've taken over, because no sane person lets them in the front door. They have to do it this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so many of their policies, they manufacture consent through a kind of stealth language. They'll put forth their alleged agenda. For example, they're always talking about, well, we want choice and competition in the schools. Choice and competition. Sounds great, right? And but they don't talk about their latent agenda, which you find when you read these like reports from the World Bank that estimate if you can privatize the globe's public school systems, there's like $3 trillion in extra revenue for various firms, you know, to make. You know, they've got to privatize everything so they can trade wealth, basically.
Well, again, said. That's about the best I've heard it put. It is about how much money the corporation, and never about the individual. And Social Security is the same way. Privatize it, not because it helps anybody. Right.
That's right. Concentrate the wealth, and also break the teachers' union, which they can't stand. you know, some workers out there have some protections, you know, and some decent benefits, maybe. No, they can't stand unions. I'm fortunate to be in one because it got me on a mailing list of, you know, a couple good, you know, not great, well, a few good union efforts, you know, to maybe do a little newsletter or whatever, and I've got to learn about some of McCain's positions on labor, which are so rarely discussed, and they're so reactionary and anti-union. You know, people really, I don't know. Again, he would not be a popular person. They have to sell him on these kind of feelings, and he's a hero, and he's a real American kind of thing. Avoid policy at all costs. Serious discussion of policies, because they are elitist. And oftentimes Clintons are, and also Obamas, sadly. But certainly more so with the right-wingers. I guess Obama, well, we were talking about the Latin American churches and how they're mobilizing people and they posed a threat to the elites in Latin America. And they were concerned about liberation theology, and people like Archbishop Romero were practicing it and speaking for the poor and justice. And this one bishop in Brazil famously said something like, "When I feed the poor, they call me a saint. But when I ask why are the people poor, they call me a communist."
Wow.
Yeah.
That's priceless. Glad you shared that.
Yeah. And so I think it very much leads to what's going on here now in this country. Black liberation theology has come up. And although this controversy, I'm sure, hurts Obama among many voters, I'm so glad that this controversy has taken place, because this voice is out there and generally very politically astute and spiritually astute ways. People want to knock him for the Q&A period during his press conference, and that's when Obama distanced himself from Jeremiah Wright as well. But I think generally the guy's speaking the truth, and the way he's being attacked, it's very reminiscent of how Ward Churchill was attacked here. He's a professor. Do you know him?
No, but I'm very interested in hearing the story.
Well, he wrote a very controversial essay, something like When Chickens Come Home to Roost, like the day after 9/11 occurred, the attack.
Oh, yes, yes. Vaguely familiar now. Yes, I read of it, but I did not read it.
And the media came down on him like a ton of bricks, very much in the same manner that Jeremiah Wright's being treated in the media, with a particular loop of certain remarks, some that were objectionable, some not put very gracefully, some I don't agree with. But again, generally speaking, They're both making very important points, but they focus us on the, you know, the term, the phrases that can be, you know, maybe don't reflect so well. Like the AIDS suggestion, you know, he's being dismissed as a kook. But
yeah.
And we can disagree with that theory. I don't know myself, but we do know much of our history of experimentation on African American and other vulnerable communities. That's not even.
Yes, we do. And in fact, I would very much let. There's a fellow who's a highly educated and well researched individual who, and has clearly placed it with. Her hepatitis vaccines that they were in New York regarding the beginning of the AIDS crisis, and I would like to have him on the show to discuss it, because I'm not qualified to do it. I'm still trying to find a way to track him down. But let me just say that people shouldn't be laughing at that theory. There's a lot of credible research behind it, actually.
Yeah, Yeah, it's, and whatever it is, it remains a mystery, whatever is causing it. There's a lot of different angles on it. I've heard of possibly a contaminated virus, or a contaminated vaccination for polio in Africa. Have you heard that one?
Have not heard that one, but yes, the thing about the vaccinations, it's very similar. Yeah.
And then, you know, we've got large parenting and mainstream family groups and medical associations, some of which are complaining about vaccinations we give children all the time. Apparently some vaccines have lead in them. And that's why some people think so many children have autism these days.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the way they frame it, it's always, he said this. And they're just trying to teach us how to think. Dismiss it out of hand. Don't have an actual discussion about anything. Just dismiss it. It's training us to be dismissive. And it was kind of disappointing to see, you know, Obama distance himself from it. You know, I understand it kind of politically, but, you know, it's disappointing when Clinton distanced herself as well. You know, I would have left that church or whatever. Well, that would have been your loss. But
good point, Preston. And you can't blame the black church has been the community for black people for so many years. It was really the only they weren't allowed in the white communities. So it was like their home. It was like a family. And sure, they talked about the white people of those churches and how they were treated. Wouldn't you?
Definitely. And so many of the right wing ideologues are trying to make this false analogy. They'll say, well, if McCain was in a white centric church, you know, we'd be flipping out. And if he was pushing white values and the white family and so on and so forth. Hannity repeats that argument constantly. And he gets to just say it over and over. No one gets to really confront him on it, on the logic of it. And what he's doing basically is saying, you know, he's leaving out the context, the political context, because if we went to a place like apartheid South Africa, and if we saw there were black churches mobilizing black families and were suspicious of the white community, we'd understand that. And if at the same time there were white churches in apartheid South Africa pushing a white agenda, we'd be offended by it because of the power relations going on, the oppression and the constant jailings and the disparities in wealth and property and on and on and on. So basically what Hannity is doing is putting forth the argument of apartheid South Africa. And we've got very much the same situation. We're not like apartheid South Africa. In fact, in some ways, it's not by all measures, certainly. In many ways, we're not like apartheid South Africa. In some ways, we're worse. If we look at jailings, for example, we jail our African-American population at a rate higher than the worst period of apartheid South Africa jailing.
Good point. And per capita, we have, of any civilized nation, we have more of our citizens in jails and prisons than any other country, even China. Yeah, we do.
Yep. So
and we're privatizing that.
That's right. Good point. That's right. And sometimes using the people inside as cheap labor.
Yes.
I read this anecdote about a guy who lost his job here in the U.S. at a factory. I think it was in Oregon. And it went to Mexico. And, you know, they hired the sweatshop workers. The guy who was unemployed turned to petty crime, ended up, you know, after cashing or pushing some bad checks, stuff like that, ended up in prison. He got his job back while he was in prison because the company found that even cheaper than the sweatshop labor, they can move back to the U.S. and put to work the U.S. prison population for even less. Then he ended up doing the same job.
Yes, and the private prison outfits are making quite a lot of money, and there's a lot of profit. And you wouldn't think so, but there's a lot of profit.
Yeah.
And you could rip the government off on meals, like Halliburton is, or Kellogg Brown and Root is, regarding the soldiers. There's so many ways.
Yeah, and you could argue, you know, that prisoners should be learning some skill or doing something, and sometimes they want to be occupied somehow. But again, if they can be supplied the jobs on the outside to begin with, we don't have so many on the inside who need stuff to do. And with no chance of forming unions and getting paid 30 cents a day or whatever.
Exactly. It's a permanent underclass, and it's a way of just housing them. McDonald's isn't going to cut it. There's no way you can support a family. And the people that acknowledge that to themselves, what have you got but crime or selling drugs?
Yeah. You know, for the first time in a while, I heard the voice of somebody on food stamps on the media. And it was a person who called in to C-SPAN during one of their shows. And they had a reporter from the Washington Post who specializes in agriculture policy. And he seemed kind of, he wasn't particularly, progressive or hard-hitting himself, but he seemed like a fair enough guy and open to suggestions for stories. And this woman called up. She was on food stamps, and I guess the Department of Agriculture handles that program, and the crumbs that people are given and the constant cutting of whatever they get and the new regulations on if you can even get the crumb and...
Preston, that's so true. My sister actually has been involved in social service since she started her career. She's just a few years younger than me and has done everything from directing a Meals on Wheels organization to working at regarding Alzheimer's and in a resource center. And she's been very involved, let's put it like that. So she knows her way around helping people to get food stamps or other assistance, and she has told me quite frankly that in the training for these state employees, or in some cases county employees, who are charged to assist low income people or to help them work their way through the system, they are not trained to do that. They are trained to, in any way possible, disqualify the person from receiving the service. That is what their job is. Their job is not to help you, and it is not to refer you to another agency that could help you. It is to make you go away.
Yep. What a shame.
Yeah.
What a shame. And, boy, there are these guys on the radio. Entitlement. How dare they think they're entitled?
And all that. I know it.
Meanwhile, they're dispatching an army of lobbyists and, you know, agents to procure as much as they think they're entitled to. Amazing. So anti the Christian ethic, you know, care for the least among us and that thing, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, lastly, before I let you go, I was listening to your clips that you're playing.
Yes.
And I had heard them earlier, actually. Ed Schultz had played it. And I really am having a hard time hearing it. And I'm certainly going to, I think I have a copy of that DVD here somewhere. Or I might try to find it on Netflix or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
well, I'll be glad to send you the MP3s, Preston. Just drop me a note at peter@headonradionetwork.com, so I'll have your reply address, and I'll send them right out later this evening.
Peter@headonradionetwork.com.
And when I get that mail after the show, I'll just send, it's just two little attachments. They're less than 500K a piece, the two that ran on the air. And if you have headphones on, it's like a little tiny microscope, and you can hear exactly what he's saying.
Okay. And I don't know. I'm concerned about this because I see another big argument developing between different factions of the Democratic
yep.
Party. And I'm wondering, where are these stories, what are their origins? You know what I mean? Like,
therein lies the question, Preston. That's the million-dollar question, sir. Yes, the origin.
Yeah. I mean, like, who's been combing through the Jeremiah Wright sermons and fishing out particular lines? And by the way, when Bill Moyers played the extended versions of those sermons, man, it was so powerful. And in fact, I thought for a couple of days there, I was hoping this is all going to be flipped around by Obama, you know, and just say, you know, don't try to shy away from him and view him as this albatross around your neck, this liability. This guy is an asset. He's an asset. He's been one for Obama for 20 years, his family, that community. Now he can be one for the entire nation. And there's so much of what he was saying that could have been used that way.
Again, well, yes, I agree.
Controlling the discussion, though. Who's picking what? Who's telling us what sort of attitude to have around it? Even lots of progressives now are saying, oh, my gosh, he's an egomaniac. How could he do this? So on and so forth. I'm like, what are you looking at?
Yeah, well, he may be an egocentric person, and he may have been able to present it better. But no matter what you say to discredit the man, he cannot deny that he has his ear close to the people.
Yeah. And exactly, he may be an egomaniac. That is, he may have those flaws, those human flaws that we all do, and we all say stupid things, and we all say comments that oftentimes we wish we hadn't made, or that people point out to us that we shouldn't have made, and it can be an awkward, embarrassing thing, but we all go through it. And I hope that, you know, if we're dismissing him or Ward Churchill or so many others for these moments, then in a way I guess we're going to be dismissing ourselves ultimately, because we do it too. And you know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
Like this Cantor, all we know about him is this remark, which I may very well hear it when I listen to your MP3s. I trust that I will. He's so much more than that. Apparently, he was very much involved with civil rights legislation.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, he was. And to his credit, he was. And to his credit, too, he said that at a time that he thought he was amongst just the inside core group, and it was, you know, it was never his intention to say that publicly, and it was probably, I have said things all my life, Preston, that well, I intended to be funny, but could be taken another way. In fact, I love innuendo.
Yeah.
I don't think I would innuendo the way he did it, but but nonetheless, yeah, we're all human, and it's maddening to see the how we discredit people when they're only human, yet we ignore the monster in the White House. We ignore it, except for us. You know, but the mainstream media will ignores it. But everybody else has to be perfect. It's maddening.
Yeah, and we're undercutting, community that could be being built, or solidarity, or points of commonality that could be exploited. And, you know, ways in which, I don't know, we could be learning things and from each other instead of just, firing away at each other all the time. And, Hillary Clinton as well. And I'm the first one to critique Paul. She's been involved with or associated with, or her husband. I think some of the more substantial critiques haven't really been put forth. I mean, there was like 2 weeks on her the circumstance of her landing in Bosnia 12, 13 years ago. A country, by the way, I don't think I would have wanted to be landing in personally, because we had so demolished that country with the bombing. And, you know, all the sniper fire talk. There wasn't sniper fire yet, but, you know, there was 80 days of this massive bombing we inflicted on that country. And so to fly in the corkscrew method or whatever they had to do, I mean, that part of it probably was kind of creepy. And I'm glad she wasn't actually being shot at, but it probably wasn't a fun landing in some ways. That's my suspicion. But anyway.
Yes, that's a very good point. There was a whole rigmarole about her saying she was under fire.
Yeah.
and the Republicans, and you contrast it. Mind-boggling, isn't it, Preston?
Yeah, and there's the much more, you know, the deeper issues, the issues that implicate all of us, actually. I think that's part of the reason why sometimes we're almost eager to just pin it on other people, because, I mean, that bombing, that was all of us. That was our tax dollars. That was, you know, members of our family who are in the military or in the Navy pushing the buttons, sending off the cruise missiles and all this stuff. And you know, we still have these companies like DynCorp, one of these private military companies that was had a whistleblower within the company that exposed that DynCorp was running this child sex ring in Yugoslavia. And you can go on and on. And Clinton, you know, the use of cluster bombs. I mean, that's a harsh criticism of Hillary Clinton. And that's the sort of thing that I think progressives should be getting mobilized on, you know, not writing and just mocking notes to her about, you know, not the no sniper fire, but writing her office and saying, you know, we're offended that you voted to continue the use of cluster bombs. Obama voted against the use of cluster bombs. You know, that's a big difference right there, a substantial one. And, you know, that kind of real policy discussion is being the ways in which we're being intentionally diverted away from that stuff. It's really irritating, I must say. The public relations industry and these, some of these media, some people in the media, boy, it's the synchronicity with which they have these agendas working. It's really remarkable at times.
Well, Preston, I really have to hand it to you. You have an amazing, almost uncanny ability to remain centered, for lack of a better way to put it, to view things objectively. I know I don't always, because I think part of it is I see too much, and I see it very quickly. No point in explaining. But I admire you for the fact that you are able to remain centered and to look at all of these, because they're priceless. These are things we need to hear, because sometimes, so many times, the left is reactionary too.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm fortunate that I'm lucky that you know, so many things that I've been missing for a while, I've had some people try to multiple sides, I guess, at things. I don't know.
Well, it's a gift, Preston. Not everyone can do that, but you have an honest given knack for doing it. You do it so well.
Have you ever heard of a program called Alternative Radio by chance?
No, sir. I have not, but if you recommend it. Oh, and by the way, I got the movie, and you recommended the other week. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. What was it? It starts with an H. Anyway, you mentioned the radio show, and I digress, because you're recommending something else. And anyway, what I'm trying to say is that the things that you tell me about to watch or listen to are always just amazing.
Glad you got something out of that stuff. And Yeah, there's just that's another thing. I mean, so often we're angry about the situation of the media, myself as well, but the, you know, there's this other part of the media that's just so great. You know, actually, Ed Schultz recommended. I didn't know that Bill Moyer's interview with Jeremiah Wright was coming, and you know, just watching stuff like that. I mean, Bill Moyer's what an incredible media teacher he's been. And I just got to watch Phil Donahue actually in an interview with a guy named Frank Boyd on C-SPAN, and oh my gosh, it was just and he stayed very, Phil Donahue has stayed very centered, and he's taken all kinds of heat because he worked with Ralph Nader for his 2000 campaign, and you know, they got all that grief. And, you know, you just see this pattern of a while, how we're constantly being told to hate one or another progressive person or liberal person, or, you know, just resent everybody and think the worst of them and know how they're messing up everything or hate America or whatever. And, that's the red flag every single time. I'm like, now why am I supposed to hate this person now? And who would push this sort of agenda? And yeah.
You're right, President. And I can use myself as an example. People resist that. People resist that listening and asking those questions because it takes work. One has to sit down and listen and put myself in their shoes and approach it from, whereas to just react, I hate those people, are all so stupid, it's very easy. It's quick, it's easy, you're done.
Yeah.
It's like fast food, you know. Yeah. To condemn is like fast food, and I can imagine that in your life, doing what you do and speaking the way you do, you've probably come to that same conclusion.
Yeah, and the techniques are so, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, the techniques are so sophisticated too, more so all the time. Sometimes very blatant, sometimes very subtle. Sometimes we just grow up on these kind of prejudices that they entrench in our minds. I was thinking just the other day, I think yesterday was May Day. And May Day around the world is this celebration of international solidarity. But in this country, it's been, it has this negative connotation. It became this word of warning, you know? I can think of all like these military, 50s, 60s, 70s military movies where the plane is in distress and you're yelling, Mayday, Mayday. And I really don't think that's just a coincidence. I really think that there's some psyops person, some info warrior in the FBI or some other institution that's like, how do we connote something negative about this International Workers Solidarity Day? And we're going to turn it into this word of warning. And frightened. Again, it's that fear button that is constantly pushed.
Very interesting that you bring that up, because in the United States yesterday was the National Day of Prayer. And the National Day of Prayer is at this point, it wasn't intended to be back in 1952, but Reagan had an effect on it, and Bush has had a huge effect on it. It's now a wholly owned subsidiary of Focus on the Family. And the National Day of Prayer is basically a be afraid, be very afraid day, because you're supposed to pray for the military and the constant threats to the country and that our leaders will be able to defend us and all the things that keep everybody just a little bit rattled. And you just have to, you know, why May 1st? Well, this May 1st date was not set back in 1952. It was just, there should be a National Day of Prayer. It was George W. Bush himself who firmly said it in concrete, that this is the day. So one wonders about the psychops, as you say, even to the level of when the National Day of Prayer is. This is uncanny.
I think that's, yep, there it is. In fact, I saw a photo of Dobson speaking. I don't know if it was National Prayer Day event, but behind him was this huge banner, and it said something like something about the defense of marriage. The colors of the banner were black and red, which is completely black and red is the color of that's been used on flags and banners of these workers' movements around the world.
Interesting. I never would have put that together.
Yeah. Black is more associated with anarcho-syndicalism, labor organizing, and questioning authority, and the red is, of course, the communist part. And so there's Dobson on the stage, you know, mobilizing, and he's got this black and red banner behind him. And, again, it's they see these movements developing, the right wing does, the elites. They don't like popular movements, and they, you know, in addition to trying to smear leaders or, you know, they assassinate people like Archbishop Oscar Romero and others. And but they also do the smear character assassination, and then they also do co-optation of movements and try to take the energy of the discontent and the fear and, you know, people's longing for some sort of community in a struggle oftentimes, and they put it into these defensive marriages, marriage movements, or, you know, defend ourselves from the gays and the immigrants and the Muslims instead of, you know, going after what popular movements usually go after, and that is, you know, breaking down these concentrations of both resource, wealth, and decision-making power in society. You know, democracy, basically.
Yeah, you know, democracy. Well done. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I had to stop and laugh there. Yeah, you know, democracy. Cool. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm glad I got a chance to catch up with you.
I am too.
Again, that's a great interview. Do you have your stuff on? Is it all on pods, or do you do MP3s for your show? Or is it
sure do. They're available either by going to strictlyconfidentialradio.com. strictlyconfidentialradio.com always has a calendar there on the homepage, and you can look within any calendar date and see who the guest was, and the link to the audio archive is right there, so it makes it handy if you want to know which guest you're looking for the archive for. Or you can go to White Rose Society, and that is its archive. It's there listed by date. strictlyconfidentialradio.com site just organizes it by who was on, makes it easy. Yeah, it's MP3. Click and listen.
Okay. Thank God. And I, you know, I'm not real familiar with pods, but is there a, if I wanted to forward it, that's a pretty simple process, I imagine.
Yes, your player, most players, as you listen to it, or once you've completed listening to it, you can use file save.
Okay.
And file save, different players configure it differently. Some are more of a mystery than others, but the way it should be, if everything were standardized, you would always click file save and you'd have the MP3, but if you're unable to save the MP3 and forward it, you can always just forward the homepage or forward the site and tell them where to click, you know,
okay.
Forward the link.
Yeah, I'm not very good at that stuff, at some computer stuff. I'm just happy I can stream radio every now and again, and my email's up and running, and I'm not bombarded with spam. I'm in good shape. So.
Yeah, sometimes it's the simple things that keep us sane.
yes, indeed. Well, all right. Well, enjoy your weekend, Peter.
Thank you, Preston. I always enjoy talking to you, and I know Bob does too. We've secretly whispered behind your back. And you're always a remarkable caller and such depth. We appreciate you very much as a listener.
Well, thank you, both of you, for being out there for this great forum.
Thank you, Preston.
Take care.
And good evening. And thank you, Preston. You have a great weekend, too. Good night.
Thanks. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that, folks, is Preston from Denver, one of the most remarkable characters you're likely to meet on the Head On Radio Network, because